helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing the things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Call 340-1045. That's 340-1045. Now, the conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrayan on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good evening, Jacksonville, and happy Saturday. I'm Danielle Lee. Welcome to the conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrayan. As always, you too can join the conversation. Give us a call, 340-1045. How are you today, Dr. Ali?
I am good. How are you?
I'm well. The weather's kind of making me sleepy, so I'm going to try and push through today.
It's a great, great day to listen to the radio.
Yes, exactly. What's going on?
So today, I'm excited to have a dear friend of mine, Dr. Sam Brown, in the studio. He's been on the show before, a renowned in vitro fertilization, or IVF expert, which is something that 2015 CDC said approximately 1.6% of infants born in the United States were born to some kind of assisted reproductive technology, and his Center Brown Fertility offers hope and the possibility to a lot of people that often come into his clinics, I would assume, without a hope that there may not be an option for having a baby. And that really is the slogan of his clinic, Brown Fertility, is to make miracles happen. And I truly believe that's the case. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ali. Thanks for having me here.
So today we're going to discuss something that's been all over the media over the past month, where unfortunately in early March, two clinics in different parts of the country, renowned clinics, these were not clinics that were without without the people that were doing the right thing or trying to do the right thing, had the unfortunate experiences where the storage tanks, basically using liquid nitrogen to keep the embryos and frozen eggs frozen, had malfunctions that resulted in a significant amount of loss and a significant amount of just unbelievable heartbreak for the people involved on both sides of the fence. I would assume that the physicians and the people that run those clinics, their hearts were ripped into a million pieces as well, because I know you guys take this a lot to heart. What happened?
Sure. You're right. You know, the way I like to describe IVF, or in vitro fertilization or fertility treatments, it's very sensitive, very dramatic. It gets a lot of attention. Every day I have patients that come in with fears about, hey, doc, am I going to get the right eggs or the right sperm, or is anything bad going to happen to my embryos? And all day I have to assure patients, dispel myths. And in regard to this, it's very controlled. It's very regulated, way more than people realize. And to reassure patients, I like to say that, you know, if we make a mistake in our clinic, it doesn't make local news, it makes national news. So they should be reassured that you don't hear of these things that often. You're right, there's over 450 IVF centers in the United States, and you don't hear of mishaps that often. Maybe every 2 or 3 years you hear of something. And this is the latest something. This was the latest where the containers that were holding frozen embryos or frozen sperm or frozen eggs had an issue and were rendered not usable. So it led immediately to national news and a lot of discussion about it.
And the challenge with this is these eggs and embryo are very sensitive. I know in your clinic, on our last show, we discussed the amount of regulation and the amount of things you guys do internally to make sure that the temperatures are set, everything's backed up. There's an immense checks and balance system to prevent things like this happening. And again, the rarity of this, you know, 2015 is the last time the CDC put out big national data. At that point, like you mentioned, there were 464 clinics at that time, and there were 231,936 cycle of some kind of reproductive technology. It's almost 232,000 cycles producing almost 61,000 live births. Pregnancies, of which he had 73,000 live births, and of those, 46,000 cycles were related to getting eggs that were going to be frozen for later use. And I mentioned before, 2015, 1.6% of infants born in the United States every year come from some of these technologies. So the rarity of something like this happening across the nation speaks volumes to the level of control and level of regulation and the level of care from the people that run these clinics to ensure the safety of the both the eggs and the embryos, understanding the amount of work both emotionally and from actually the medical aspects that goes into a woman and her partner going through this process, or even a man and a partner trying to do this in these day and ages. So when you saw this in the news, what was the first thing that you thought?
First thing I thought of is I had an opposite feeling. I felt, you know, it reassured me almost just how rare this is. You know, with all the fertility centers, like you mentioned, in the United States and in the world abroad, 10 million babies have been born from IVF almost. And when you hear these rare events, I would challenge that it, with our regulations and protocols, that accidents probably happen way less than the airline industry. Way less than 1% of centers have these things happen. So I definitely want to dispel fear in patients who have pursued IVF or infertility treatments, for sure. It's a very, very safe process. Also, you know, how common it is. You're right. 10% of the population in general pursues fertility treatments. So my goal is to dispel fear and make this real, and coming on air today to show how rare of an event this is and how that patients can feel comfort in the safety and security with the regulations that we have in place with IVF and storage.
So one of the things that they mentioned in the Cleveland, and one thing the media kind of talks about is the Cleveland Clinic, and it's not the Cleveland Clinic, a clinic of University Hospitals Clinic System in the Cleveland area, who lost about 4,000 embryos affecting 950 families. They're very transparent and have done a lot to try to help in a situation that is very, very glim in a lot of people's eyes. The California clinics have been criticized for not necessarily being as open with what they're doing. The discussions here were that in Cleveland, an alarm system that was supposed to alert staff to changes in temperature was shut off or malfunctioned in some kind of way, resulting in this problem. So, one, I would assume that coming off of this, internally, IVF clinics are going to probably do more to make sure this doesn't happen to them. And secondarily, do you think that the national regulations are going to look at this stuff a little bit more closely? Both of these clinics were accredited with the associations that do by year. So every 2 years, they go and get regulated by the College of American Pathologists, which is not something mandated. It's right. Something they chose to do to make sure that they're regulated. So every 2 years, people are coming and checking systems. So it's not something like these clinics were just kind of haphazard and not
exactly
getting regulated.
Fertility centers are very regulated, and it wasn't the fact of under regulation. And with humans, it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be 100% type thing. So you're going to have these rare events. And to me, the unfortunate thing would be more regulation. We are burdened as much as a liver transplant center would be by the FDA. So the federal government comes into our offices every year or two and make sure that we're regulated properly. And by state regulation, even at the state level, they come in to make sure that we have a high complexity lab director and all the things that go and are involved with an embryology lab are run properly. So there's many layers of regulation, not just one regulator. We probably have five regulators. And so we are, I hope that there's no extra regulation that comes out of this.
Because that could hurt more than help.
I think it'll hurt more than help. It'll raise more costs. And the process in place to prevent this from happening is pretty dramatic. We all have sensors on these storage facilities and storage tanks. And when these embryos are bathed in liquid nitrogen, they're good for a month at a time. They only have to be up reevaluated once a month or so to make sure that the proper level of coolant is in the tanks. And it takes minimal amount of effort to keep them rolling. So what probably happened at the Cleveland Clinic or the center that was involved was multi-level error. And we know that in medicine, you have a chain of mistakes that lead to an error. And they had a breakdown of probably three or four issues, or maybe even five issues that led to this, where the tanks didn't have enough liquid nitrogen store in the tanks to keep the embryos cryopreserved. So it was more of it could have been an equipment issue. It could have been a lab personnel duty issue. And it probably was most all these all together that led to the problem.
So the fact that not one error by itself could potentially do this, though, because it's a series of checks and balances are in place to keep everything safe. Here the problem would be that if you have a cycle of things happening all at the same time, you create a perfect storm for something to happen. The amazing thing about this, and CNN did a story where one of the leads in the pathology group that I mentioned that regulates these clinics and other pathology labs in the city, the College of American, or in the country, the College of American Pathologists, he mentioned that it was very, very amazing in a very heartbreaking standpoint that these two incredibly rare events happened so close to each other. One was on March 4th. The other one was March 6th, and they were completely different parts of the country, so they're no way related. But it was just the possibility of this happening if someone wanted to plan it would be very difficult to do, let alone the fact that it happened. And so that's where the media attention, not as a solitary thing, gets so much attention, but the negative. And so today what we hope to do is kind of dispel some myths, give some clarity as to what exactly happens through the IVF process, and kind of reassure people that have eggs and embryos that are in clinics in planning for future fertility and future children, that everything is safe and will probably be a little bit safer from what happened. Our hearts go out to the families involved in the issues in San Francisco area and in Cleveland, because I cannot imagine the heartbreak, especially for those people who this was potentially their last chance at fertility, being age-related, or people who underwent chemotherapy and things like that. So it's a very heartbreaking issue. So hopefully if we can reassure people in some way where these things are rare, and that IVF creates opportunities and hope in places where hope a lot of times and in the past was not there, we have done something, I hope, a bit helpful in a situation that is very heartbreaking.
Exactly. And we're going to take a short break right now. We'll be right back with more of the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. All right, and we are back with the conversation. I only have a few minutes left in this segment, but I know there's so much more you want to get to with this show.
No, we just started.
I know.
Welcome to the conversation, everyone. Today we have Dr. Sam Brown of Brown Fertility in our clinic, who's an IVF specialist, and we are talking about the heartbreaking events of early March, where almost 2,000 frozen eggs and embryos in the Pacific Fertility Center in San Francisco were compromised on March 4th, and then a few days later on March 6th at the University Hospitals of Cleveland Medical Center, 4,000 frozen eggs and embryos were compromised, and in that area approximately 950 families were unfortunately and heartbreakingly affected. So today we're talking about why that happened, what that means, and also clarify a little bit about the truths and myths of in vitro fertilization. So one question I had, Dr. Brown, was, you know, they talk about frozen eggs and embryos. What is the difference, and what does that mean in terms of the in vitro fertilization process?
Excellent. So patients will come in, young single women under age 37. We encourage to cryopreserve their eggs for future use if they're not ready to procreate at that point in their life, because after age 37, 38, it becomes very difficult and the eggs aren't as good as they were at a younger age. So we promote for young women to come in, go through the IVF process, which is, it sounds very fancy, but we've made it fairly easy to proceed with.
And what is in vitro fertilization?
In vitro, to make it simple, it's 3 weeks of birth control pills, 10 days of a tiny little shot, and then with a needle, we get the eggs from the ovaries. And then for those that want to freeze their eggs, at that point, we freeze them. And in the past 5 years, techniques have come about where it's very good. It's reliable where we can freeze eggs. And 10 years later or longer even, you can thaw them, and they're just as good as they were at the age that you got them.
This isn't the same concept of cryopreservation where people historically talk about, you know, Walt Disney kind of preserved his body. So if something came up, they could bring him back to essentially immortality. They could do that. Here, you're actually doing that where you kind of freeze the cycle of life in the egg and the embryo, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And then when the woman is ready to have children based on multiple factors in her own personal life, when she's ready, you can kind of thaw them and bring them back to life, if you will, for what they were intended to do.
That's a great way to put it. It's exactly right. With modern techniques, we are able to cryopreserve an egg or freeze an egg, and it doesn't age. It stops it from aging. And later, when you thaw them, there is no freezer burn. There is something making them less. And later on, when you thaw them and fertilize them, they'll become wonderful embryos and placed into the uterus, and you get pregnant fairly easy nowadays. So the age of the sperm doesn't matter as much. The age of the uterus doesn't matter as much, but the age of the egg is critical. And if we can freeze them at a young age, it really is great for those that want to delay childbearing.
And that's a big thing right now nationally, where people are kind of very much promoting this, especially as women are delaying having, again, couples even are delaying having children because of career, because of life, because of whatever they want to. And the earlier that you freeze the eggs, you capture that moment of life, which eggs seem to be healthier earlier.
Absolutely. And it's all from the advent of some techniques that we've developed in the lab in the last 5 to 10 years, where it's easier for most fertility centers to do this. So it is a huge agenda nationwide and worldwide to cryopreserve eggs for future use.
And why does the age matter? What happens?
Well, it's very complicated, but to make it simple, as the woman ages, especially after age 38 or 40, the eggs are less good. They don't want to bind to the sperm properly, and the genetic material doesn't want to separate properly. And then these embryos resulting, the abnormal ones, won't take. They just don't get pregnant from these older eggs, typically, or they miscarry more. So the age of the egg is really paramount. And it's all important. You need to have sperm, you need to have a uterus, you need to have eggs. But the age of the egg is really a key factor in success in having a baby.
And this is for all the critics of IVF. This is not an ageism concept. It's not anything that's personal. This is based on science of the physiology of the egg.
It really is. And what it is, a woman's born with a certain number of eggs. And when she gets closer to 40, you're at the bottom of the barrel of the good eggs that would make babies. But the age of the uterus doesn't matter as much. The age of the sperm, guys are fortunate where they continue to generate sperm, so they don't age or become less quality over time.
Even though studies now are showing that may not necessarily be the truth, so guys, watch out for the stories to come in the future with that. Now, right. With the embryo, so basically you take the egg and you do what's called an in vitro fertilization, where you add the sperm to the egg, mm-hmm. essentially outside of the body, with scientists and embryologists who are very skilled at doing this, and that is the process of in vitro fertilization, where an egg plus a sperm, which are fertilized, then create the embryo, which is the first stage of life.
Yes. And to make it simple, I kind of wish they would have had a softer, simpler name for IVF. I wish they would have called it assisted reproduction or something when they first developed this. The name at times can scare people, the acronym IVF, like what does that mean? And it's fairly simple for patients to do it, but behind the scenes, there is a lot of wonderful science that makes this happen. But you're right. So we get eggs with a needle. So it's a human natural egg, and we combine a sperm to that egg, and it naturally becomes an embryo. We can't make an artificial egg. We can't make an artificial sperm. I wish we could. There's a lot of people that could use that. So it's a natural egg, natural sperm that becomes an embryo. We watch it in the laboratory for a few days, and then we place them in the uterus, or we might genetically test them. We can test the embryo to see if it's normal or not.
Them.
Or you could cryopreserve them for later use. Absolutely. So it's fairly simple for patients to understand from that light. But behind the scene, there was a lot of science that got it to this
point. Again, your embryologists and embryologists in any in vitro fertilization, those are the people that actually do a lot of the work, are the key to the success of any in vitro fertilization clinic or IVF clinic, because they do a good bit of the scientific work that leads to success.
You're exactly right. I give the doctor credit to get the patient in and to get them rolling, but I give the physician maybe 10% credit, but I give the embryologist 90% of the credit.
And that's
going
to be the key. And with this, when we come back in the next half hour, what we'll do is we'll talk about the processes from what we just described with IVF and how those tanks made a big difference and why they're such a big part of keeping the freezing process in place and why so many checks and balances are in place to keep those eggs viable and those embryos viable for later use.
All right, we're going to grab an update from Fox News, get your local forecast for the weekend. We'll be right back with the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKB. All right, and we are back with the conversation. I'm Danielle Lee here with Dr. Ali Kazrayan. We're halfway through the show, but we have so much more to get to.
So welcome to the conversation. In our second hour, I'm here with Dr. Sam Brown, who's a good friend and a renowned infertility specialist who specializes in assisted reproductive techniques, of which in vitro fertilization is one. And today, you know, what prompted this conversation, unfortunately, is all the news in the media over the past month of the loss of frozen eggs and frozen embryos in two centers in the United States, in San Francisco and in the Cleveland area, that resulted in almost 6,000 frozen eggs and embryos being lost, affecting a significant amount of people at a most heart-wrenching, in one of the most heart-wrenching ways one could imagine. And to kind of dispel some of the myths and some of the truths of not only that situation, but IVF and in vitro fertilization in totality, Dr. Brown joined us here today. And right before the break, we're talking about the differences between what a frozen egg and a frozen embryo is, and how that what that means to the in vitro fertilization process of getting there. So if someone's trying to make a decision on what to do, you'd mentioned before that frozen eggs are usually for people, younger women who are trying to delay having children and want to capture their eggs at their healthiest for possible future fertility. With the embryo options, what options exist once people decide, I'm going to pursue this to try to have a child now? And what are some things that you'd think about when they're talking to their IVF specialist, which I would now include the safety of the embryos and eggs that they try to freeze or cryopreserve?
I think it's a great question, because in these tanks where the tragedy occurred, it wasn't just embryos frozen. It was eggs frozen. It was probably sperms frozen as well. And you're right. To get to that point, it's two different paths typically. Those that have frozen eggs were usually younger women that just wanted to cryopreserve their eggs for future use so they could delay childbearing. If, you know, the best time to freeze eggs for a woman's under age 37. So you have 35-year-olds that come in, cryopreserve their eggs. And then later in life, if they find Mr. Right or what have you, and they want to use them at age 42, 45.
Farmers is right.
Right. When they're 42, 45 or later, they will still have the wonderful potential to become life, unlike women over age 38 or 40, where the eggs don't freeze as
well.
And
that has nothing to do with the age of the uterus, but the age of the egg.
So the age of the egg is paramount.
And another population, you know, that was featured a lot in some of these stories that were done, but also women who are undergoing chemotherapy or other therapies for cancers.
Cancer patients.
And that's the most heart-wrenching part of this story, I would assume, from both people, lay people reading the stories, but also IVF specialists, because for those women, the opportunity to have eggs because of the therapies they've undergone are not there.
Absolutely. The patients that were told that they had cancer and they needed chemotherapy that would wipe out their eggs, they quickly went through an infertility center and cryopreserved their eggs for future use. Heartbreaking, where for them, they won't have that option. They may have to use donor egg, which is very popular and it's good. But they won't be able to use their eggs that they captured before chemotherapy wiped them out.
And so as someone goes through the process of deciding whether or not to do this, what are some of the positives or negatives that obviously you're probably biased towards the positive aspect, as most people are in this situation, but what are some things that women should consider if they're thinking about freezing their eggs?
Sure. Two things. Will it work later on? Will I have a baby from these eggs? And cost, price. Those are the two main topics that come up. And it wasn't until recently that these techniques came available. So young women can come in now and freeze their eggs for future use if they have cancer or if they just want to delay having a baby. And one of the questions that should come about is, what's the success rates from this? Later on, when I thaw these eggs, what's the odds that I'll have a baby when it's fertilized and put back in my body? And it's very good these days for your good patient, age patient under age 35, success rates range now at your average fertility center, 50%, 60% chance of having a baby when those eggs are fertilized and they become embryos.
And that's continually improving, because even as far as 2015 or so, it was around 40% or 38% nationally. You kind of always live in the high 60s in terms of women younger than 35. Your personal most recent pregnancy rates are around 68%.
Personally, boastingly, we are some of the highest in the nation, and it has a lot to do, like you said earlier, about how good your embryologist is. So freezing eggs, and it does improve year after year, not only nationally as well. And then that other population of patients, those that are having infertility and they want to have a baby, they come in, we obtain the eggs, we get the eggs from the IVF process, fertilize them, they become embryos, and we cryopreserve those in these tanks as well. So those are patients that were actively pursuing fertility, and many of them get pregnant right away. And success rates are so good these days, upwards of 50%+. And the change is over the past few years that most patients have extras to freeze, where in the past, patients were fortunate, just lucky enough to have some embryos to put back in their uterus and get pregnant, and usually did not have extras to freeze. But over the past 5 years, the science has progressed to the point where most patients will have extras to cryopreserve for a second baby down the road.
And one thing to keep in mind here, which I think is an important point that we were discussing before break, is that when women go through the process of essentially creating multiple eggs, so you give medications to stimulate the process and you retrieve those eggs, not all the eggs are perfectly healthy, and not all the embryos that are developed are perfectly healthy to be used. So that's one thing to be very, very important. I think it's a very important discussion, where it's not 100% retrieval transfers to the eggs we're going to use, transfers to the embryos that we use.
It's such a smart question, and I'm so glad you asked.
Thanks,
it.
Sam.
Most media would not be understanding of that. These embryos—
That's why we need more doctors and media.
I totally agree. An embryo that's frozen, we treat them all with respect. We don't know which ones actually make life, will make a baby. Even though success rates are great, and if you have 10 frozen embryos, for example, we know that less than 50% of those would actually make a life. We actually think, because of something called embryo aneuploidy, it's actually less than a third of the frozen embryos would make life. But we do treat all of them.
And that's changing the natural genetics of the eggs and the embryo. And one thing to keep in mind, one out of three pregnancies naturally ends in a miscarriage before people even know they're pregnant, because of some of these factors that are naturally protective of the process. Here,
perfectly
scientifically,
so.
You're kind of looking at making sure that the eggs that are implanted and that are fertilized are healthy, and that the embryos that are implanted are healthy, to give you the best shot and give the women and their partner the best chance of having a healthy baby that goes through pregnancy to a live birth with
That's
health.
That's right. That's perfectly said. And we treat every embryo frozen or every egg frozen as if it could be a baby. But the reality is, not all of them would have made a baby, especially if the woman was older. So those frozen embryos that perished, we give them all respect, but the reality is less than 50% of them, probably even less than 75% of them, would have actually been a live birth.
So let me ask you, some of the critics that talk about the fact that you can check the genetics of the eggs, you can check the sex and things of that nature for people that are interested and are in wanting of that, in terms of all sorts of different criticisms that arise. the truth of it, this is a scientific aspect to not have someone go through a process of a pregnancy that is going to end the same way that brought them to you in the first place. And so you're checking the health of the genes so that you optimize the success of the pregnancy, because naturally the body tries to protect itself from not having from not having unhealthy eggs go through the process of fertilization and through a pregnancy.
Perfectly said. And most, when the egg and sperm come together in the human, it's very inefficient compared to other animals. We're the least efficient compared to other animals, where when the egg and sperm come together, it becomes an embryo. As humans, as the genetic material starts to separate, many of them will have flaws. And if they are flawed, they don't become a baby. So, or if they even got near a uterus, they either don't become a baby or they are miscarried, just like you said. We do have really wonderful techniques where we test the embryos. We can, from each embryo, we can test the genetic material. And at the level we're looking, we can look for a cystic fibrosis, sickle cell, or on the surface, just as, are the chromosome counts okay? Is it a boy or girl? We can see that very easily now with PGS or PGD. The term
what
now
is that?
It's where you, so you go through the IVF process, you have the egg and the sperm. Becomes an embryo, it fertilizes, and as it's dividing, when it makes it to day five, when it's at the 32-cell stage, we can make a little opening in that embryo without killing it and take a few cells out of there, pluck a few cells out, send it off, and they could tell us if it's generally normal or generally abnormal or not. And it's very reliable in telling you the ones that won't make it. It's not as reliable telling you the ones that will, but it's a great way to avoid genetic diseases. So that is very popular right now in efforts to avoid a child with Down syndrome, or for those that want family balancing, we can do that. In the future, hopefully in 5 or 10 years from now, we can go in and mend genetic breaks. Like for if somebody has a baby or an embryo that's with cystic fibrosis, we can go in and use CRISPR or some of these other
techniques. Yeah, there's some amazing technologies that essentially the cut and paste of genetics, exactly. Which again, you know, the critics talk about a lot. These are scientific things to try to improve life and improve life for both the parents and the children. It's not to make, you know, big sayings and big comments on our ability to control life or control outcomes.
Right. It's always controversial. It's great talk. And it's only for the positive of mankind. It really is. It's fabulous. And it's not a out of control science. It's very regulated, way more than what people realize.
All of this is to give hope where hope did not exist before, and to help in a place where help was not before. And so, you know, as all, every argument has two sides of the fence. You know, from my standpoint of this, this is a opportunity to give hope in a place where, again, the opportunity of the miracle of a baby may not have been possible before people like Dr. Brown were around.
Exactly. And it's that time again. Time for another break. You don't want to miss our last segment of the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. All right, Aaron, we are back with the conversation. It's the same time as usual. We have about 5 minutes left in this segment, so I'm just going to throw it right back over to you, Dr. Ali.
So thank you for joining us today on the conversation, and thank you so much, Dr. Sam Brown of Brown Fertility, for not only helping so many people have miracles, as you call it, when they possibly couldn't have otherwise. And for our audience today, we're talking about infertility and in vitro fertilization or assisted reproductive techniques, of which IVF is one, on the cusp of the early March heartbreaking events that happened at the Pacific Fertility Center in San Francisco and University Hospital's Cleveland Medical Center Fertility Center, where more than 6,000 frozen eggs and embryos were lost, affecting more than 2,000 couples, if not more, with a heart-rating realization that the eggs and embryos that they were hoping to use later on to have healthy baby children were no longer viable. And, you know, as a parting word to our audience, what, you know, obviously, first of all, both our hearts go out deeply to the families involved and the physicians that had to deal with and the teams that had to deal with the heartbreak of delivering that news, which I cannot imagine having to do. What are some things to tell our audience and people at large about what happened and what it means to the future of infertility and IVF or assisted reproductive technologies?
I think the word is safety. I think I need to have the audience understand that this is safe. These accidents happen way less than 1% of the time. You're probably more likely to have lightning strike you than this happened to you if you're an IVF patient. Of course, the negative is tragic. You know, these things that happen are tragic, but the odds of them happening are way, way less than 1% of the time. And when patients can realize success rates of 50 to 70% and have families, there's always a little element of risk in anything we do in life. Prices have come down dramatically. This is doable. You know, before it used to not be touchable. It used to be the price of a house. Now it's cheaper than a jet ski to go through things like assisted reproduction to have a baby. So I think it's become affordable. It's safe. I wouldn't let these rare incidents scare people. And in life, there are some rare negative things that happen, and it helps us refine our machine. It helps us become better. Centers that where this didn't happen to, and it's never happened in the Southeast United States, this type of event, but it helps all of us sharpen our skills and
protocols. I mean, what do you guys do to prevent something like this from happening?
So whenever events happen, we always have meetings. We communicate a lot, and we make sure that your team is on the same protocols, checks and balances that we have, and we really don't change anything. It just reassures what we're doing. You know, like every week we check this and that. We check this machine, and we check the monitors. We check the electricity. All the hundreds of things that are in our checks and balances, it just reassures what we do. It's not going to really change, make us do anything different. I think it just keeps us shored up.
And so for those people, you know, infertility is defined as a couple or someone who's trying to have a child for 12 consecutive months of effort without a pregnancy resulting or a pregnancy that goes through to a live birth resulting. So if that happens, you know, do not suffer alone. You're not alone. Don't be silent. And there are many, many options out there that you can consider. And finding people like Dr. Brown to talk to about that possibility, whether you do it or not, may open a door where you may not have known or thought of a door being open. And if you're younger than 37 years old and you're thinking that you may put off fertility or having children, storing your eggs and freezing the eggs is a wonderful way to capture the health of your eggs at that moment, whether you do anything with them in the future or not. It allows that conversation. And for those who can use this technology to have children, it's safe. People do well with it. And what are some questions they should ask their doctor when they first go to visit?
Well, I think bring the questions. You know, I don't be shy. Insurance pays for you to come in. They'll pay for you. A lot of people are afraid of the cost. Insurance pays for you to come in and talk about it. You know, just come in and say, hey, I think I have some infertility. I'm having trouble getting pregnant, or I'm thinking about freezing my eggs. Insurance pays for that. Come on in. It might cost you a copay or something simple. Come in and bring a list of questions that, you know, your fears, concerns, and that's what we do. We answer those. And I think in the end, you'll see it's very doable and it's safer and it's more natural than what people perceive.
And it's just a conversation, and knowledge is power, and knowledge breeds hope. And in no other avenue of medicine can I imagine that it does more than this. Would you do anything different with your career?
I love what I do. Thanks, Ali. I feel blessed to do what I do. It's a wonderful time to be an infertility doctor. I remember the day when only 20% of people would get pregnant, and that wasn't long ago, 10, 15 years ago. Now, just about everybody gets pregnant. You know, if they just do this and stay with it, everyone realizes a wonderful, beautiful family. It's wonderful to see families grow. And those that are suffering come in and have the pleasure of having a child and relieving the suffering and the happiness that comes with family. I'm very pro-family. I really love what I do. If I won the lottery, I'd do it for free.
Good for you. Well, let's hope that he wins the lottery.
Yeah, same. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, everyone.
Yes. Thank you.
Join us again next week on The Conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV.